Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I find it astonishing that our Republican colleagues continue to filibuster our efforts to get a tax break for all Americans in order to secure a bigger tax bonus for the top 3% of the American population at a cost to our debt and deficit of $700 billion.
And over the next year, when they come to the floor and talk about deficit reduction, they will be reminded that they chose $300 billion in tax breaks for the very wealthy, not paid for, increasing the deficit over any other priority.
Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, first from Rhode Island, and New York Senator Schumer, second from Saturday's special session of the U.S. Senate. As President Obama was working on a Bush tax cuts for unemployment benefits extend everything deal, the Democratic Senate held a rare Saturday session to embarrass the Republicans, as Schumer was trying to do there, on keeping the Bush tax cuts for the top 2%. Schumer even took it further, introducing a version that you may have heard about that would only extend the tax cuts for income over $1 million a year, not $250,000. That would only generate half the revenue of the original version, wouldn't do as much for the deficit. But on a program on Friday, New York's junior senator, Kirsten Gillibrand, said she'd go along.
Well, my focus has been really fighting for middle-class families, so I like the 250 cutoff because it does really put the money exactly where it needs to be. But I will support a compromise to increase the lower tax rate for up to $1 million because that does have an added benefit of really helping small businesses. So both, I think, are good proposals. They both target the most at-need, at-risk, and the biggest bang for the buck in terms of economic growth.
Senator Gillibrand here on Friday. But even though the so-called millionaire's tax couldn't avoid a filibuster, it got a majority of votes on Saturday, 53, but Republicans were unanimously opposed, and some Democrats broke ranks, including Russ Feingold, Dick Durbin, Tom Harkin, and Jay Rockefeller, plus independent Joe Lieberman. Some Democrats are now furious at both the GOP for its position in the first place and at the White House for dealing rather than confronting. Here's New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez on making such a deal as something that he considers as fundamental as tax fairness.
The majority not only have a responsibility to try to see if we can get something done, but to get something done that makes sense for the country. Do you allow yourself to be held hostage and get something done for the sake of getting something done when, in fact, it might be perverse in its ultimate result? It's almost like the question of, do you negotiate with terrorists?
Senator Menendez bringing negotiating with terrorists into it. So here's the thing. The president may not have the Democratic votes to get his compromise through. Should they show him up like that on the floor of Congress? Let's talk about it. ABC News political director Amy Walter is here. Hi, Amy. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And listeners will take your phone calls and comments online, on the air, as well, about whether the Democrats should reject their own president's deal in a public rebuke. Call us up, 212-433-WNYC. Obviously, this is mostly for Democrats right now, 212-433-9692. If it's extend all the Bush tax cuts in exchange for extending unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed, is that a deal that is so outrageous to you as a Democrat that the Democratic Congress should show up the Democratic president on the floor of the House, the floor of the Senate in this lame duck session? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your answer to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. And by the way, we'll talk to liberal economists Joseph Stiglitz and Robert Kuttner coming up. But Amy Walter, first, explain what you know so far about the deal the president is working on.
Sure. Well, it looks like over the weekend there were a couple of different conversations going on. The first was the president and the folks in the White House having conversations with Republican leader Mitch McConnell over the deal that you outlined at the beginning of the broadcast, that it would extend temporarily all of the tax cuts, but then also have an unemployment extension in there. And the other discussion is, extending some of the tax cuts that were embedded in the stimulus bill that passed early in 2009, extending some of those, especially for lower-income families. The other discussion going on, however, was the discussion that the vice president was having with congressional Democrats, trying to help placate especially the folks in the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democratic Congressional Campaign Chairman Chris Van Hollen, and those folks, remember, the folks in the House, that is, voted for and succeeded in passing a bill that would extend tax cuts just to those making under $200,000 or couples making under $250,000. So trying to really get them back on board if there is indeed a compromise that would extend tax cuts to everybody. So, you know, trying to make sure that they, on the one hand, get Republicans on board, and on the other hand, trying to make sure they don't have a revolt in the Democratic ranks.
So in the Senate, I mentioned 53 votes for Schumer's so-called millionaire's tax. It's really reverting back to the Clinton-era tax rates only on income over $1 million. The first million, right, for people who make over $1 million, the first million would still be taxed at the lower Bush rates, anything over that at the Clinton-era rates. But Harkin, Feingold, Rockefeller, and Durbin joined the Republicans in rejecting that, in addition to Joe Lieberman. How come?
Yeah, I mean, you saw, you know, the first argument was the $250,000 argument, where you had four Democrats and Lieberman vote against that, which in some ways would be the harder vote to take, because it's a, you know, for Democrats who are trying to make this argument that $250,000 is indeed a lot of money. But you had four Democrats who are up in 2012, and then Joe Lieberman, of course, is also up in 2012, go against the Democratic leadership. And then on the $1 million amendment, there are a lot of Democrats who think that by creating this $1 million threshold, what Democrats are essentially doing is ceding the argument on what the middle class is to Republicans, saying, you know, middle class is basically anybody who makes $0 to $1 million. And that's going to set a dangerous precedent.
And so is that why Russell Feingold, who was defeated, so he's got no politics to play here, presumably, voted against the Schumer bill?
I know. It's funny. He voted against both the Schumer and the $250,000, the so-called Baucus Amendment, or what's really the House version of the bill. And, you know, in many ways, I can see him doing this. I haven't seen an explanation that he's given yet, and I've not seen much discussion of this, probably for the reason you pointed out, because he's not coming back to Washington. So it's sort of seen as a, you know, he's going to do whatever he's going to do. It doesn't have political consequences. But it does raise the question, or, you know, raises the point, which is this is why a lame duck session is so difficult, because you're dealing with people who won in 2010, people who lost in 2010, people who are retiring and don't have any political consequences to worry about, people who are up in a year and a half from now who are very concerned about political consequences. But the fundamental issue we keep coming back to is, how did we get to this point, right? I mean, this is not a surprise that these tax cuts are going to go away at the end of the year. We've known this for a long, long time.
Well, it was in the original bill that they would expire at the end of 2010. That's one of the ways that Bush was able to get them enacted in the first place, because they were controversial even back in 2001 when he first proposed the idea. But why would you think anything other than this would happen, Amy? I mean, when something is politically contentious and has a political expiration date, doesn't all the real horse trading happen on the day before?
Yeah, you would think that should be the case, although they also knew going into this, you sort of say, well, do you want to compromise when you're at your strongest or at your weakest point? Do you compromise when you know you've kind of got your back to the wall, which is you just lost a midterm election, you lost a whole lot of seats, you lost control of the House? What kind of bargaining power do you have versus doing it earlier in the year, which, as you're right, it would have been potentially more contentious? But, again, you would have been in a stronger position politically.
Matt in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi there. I took time off and went down to North Carolina and worked for the Obama campaign. And all of us who were doing this really did it because we believed in certain principles. We believed in certain values. We didn't do it for the man. We did it because we had certain commitments, certain political commitments, certain moral commitments. And the sense that a lot of people have right now is that it's about time people who shared those commitments stood up and fought for them. And if that's so much the worse for the president, so be it. And enough of this sort of like this politico.com back and forth type stuff about what strategy is going to work. Truly, people are waiting for some leadership. And I think that that's really the strong feeling a lot of folks have.
And what would that mean to you, Matt, at this time? If they don't have the votes, even in this lame duck, still Democratic House and Senate, to extend the Bush tax cuts for everybody below 250 or everybody below a million, and they don't have the votes to do it the way that President Obama would prefer to do it, as well as the way you would prefer to do it, if they don't have those votes, should they let all the cuts expire, meaning taxes would go up even for the middle class starting on January 1st? Or what else would be that kind of leadership, that kind of working for principle that you're talking about?
Well, I have two things to say to that. The first is, on principle, I think taxes won't be too high if the tax cuts expire.
For everybody.
Clinton-era taxes were not too high. No one thinks Clinton-era taxes were too high. So I think that simply on principle, it's not a disaster, a moral political disaster, if those tax cuts
expire.
Secondly, on the question of compromise, I strongly believe that this notion that compromising with the Republicans is some sort of political virtue is absurd. Sometimes what you need is leadership. You need people to stand up and say, this is what we believe in and we're going to fight for it. And the Republicans are incredibly good at doing that, although I think they're very cynical. And I think that at a certain point, someone needs to just put a little steel into Obama's backbone. Mm-hmm. And if that's Nancy Pelosi, God bless her for the work she's done, and if or someone else in the Senate, then people should do that. And I think that that's actually a positive thing. That's the sort of confidence that folks need to see in their politicians.
Matt, thank you.
And I think that the people would respond very strongly to that.
Thank you for your call. And Amy Walter, ABC News political director. You know, Matt mentioned the alternative that's completely gotten lost in this debate, and that is, in fact, letting all the Bush tax cuts expire at the end of 2010, which I think our next guests, the liberal economists Robert Kuttner and Joseph Stiglitz, would say would be the option that they actually prefer the most, that the little bit of a tax hike, even on middle-class people, you know, it's not going to be a tax cut on – it's not going to be a tax hike on the unemployed because they're hurting, but they're not making anything. It's going to be a tax cut on people – sorry, tax hike on people who are working. But it goes back to the Clinton-era rates where we had all this prosperity. But that option has completely been eliminated from the debate.
Absolutely. Well, and the president took that off the table because he said early on, we will not raise taxes on 98% of Americans, period. And, you know, this is always a dilemma for Democrats when it comes to the issue of taxes, because they're constantly battling these old ghosts, right? This idea that they're going to go into an election and have to defend the tax and spend liberal caricature that will be created about them in any campaign. And, you know, they have to show that, when we're talking about taxes, we're not talking about taxes for you, regular person. We're talking about taxes for XYZ rich people. The problem, and I think Matt got right to the heart of this, and we've been seeing more and more discussion about this, is the question about leadership. I mean, that's really where a lot of this is getting down to, the sense that whether you're a liberal, whether you're a conservative, you don't really know where this president stands, where he's coming from on these fundamental issues of the economy, that there's not a narrative and a vision that's coming from this White House about here's what we need to do to move the country forward on the economy. Yes, it may hurt. This is going to be problematic for some people, but guess what? In the long run, it's going to help the whole country. We need to make sacrifice, et cetera. Whatever the argument is, it has not been outlined. It has not been sold. The other issue, and this is, and again, Matt brought this up a little bit, sort of on the periphery, but where is the rest of the party in terms of standing up, either fighting for the president's plan or fighting against the Republicans? What we see right now, the frustration among a lot of folks in the progressive community, is the fact that DNC or Bob Menendez, who's the head of the DSCC right now, aren't sitting there and going after vulnerable Republicans on this issue, that they know that if this were the opposite case, if it was a Republican president trying to push through tax cuts, they would be holding Democratic members of Congress's feet to the fire, and Democrats aren't doing that to Republicans.
Jamaica, Queens, we go to next for Frank. Frank, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Good morning, Ron. A couple of things. First, Matt said a lot of what I was saying, and I'll just add to this. This president is driving a lot of us to independent, from Democratic to independent with his actions. I'll be honest. And I've sat on boards and I've sat in conversations where, oh, we have no better choice. You know what? I'd rather sit home. I think we have a bunch of corporatists. Lieberman is definitely one. He's along with the Republicans. He's definitely one. Schumer, to a certain extent, is one who would trade our country to the corporations. They did it with the bank bailout and no follow-through with any type of holding their feet to the fire. This president has gone along with it. And you know what? I'd rather sit home next election and let whatever happened happen. And there's a lot of people coming to my point of view. And I sit in boards where people say, oh, but there's nothing better. Yes, there isn't, but you know what? Unfortunately, there's nothing happening right now that I feel comfortable about. So,
and so you're not inspired enough. The change isn't significant enough.
I sat home in the midterm.
Yeah.
I'm planning on sitting home in the next presidential election unless something drastically changes over the next few months.
Frank, thank you for your call. And that, of course, is the political calculation for any political party. How much do they lose the independents who might swing the other way versus losing their own base who's uninspired enough? And look, this happened to the Republicans, right? A lot of really conservative Republicans on domestic issues were uninspired by Bush and sat out 2008.
Yep. Yeah, it does happen. It's threading that needle, and one of the ways that you do that, you know, yes, you're going to have to, in some ways, to win over independence, you do have to disappoint your base at some point. But it's what you do and how you do it and the leadership that you show as you're doing it that could bring them along. And Frank brings up a really interesting point, too, about, okay, what's our other alternative? The question now is, will we see enough frustration, enough anger out there that we actually do see a serious primary threat to the president? And I haven't heard about it. There's no names being mentioned. We haven't seen anything like this. But certainly that's the next question. Is this going to be enough to get folks on the left riled up enough that they say, we are going to look for an alternative in 2012?
The last thing I could think of that was like that was the disastrous Ted Kennedy run against Jimmy Carter as a sitting president in 1980. And, of course, Carter did get renominated but lost to Ronald Reagan. So we'll see if anybody wants to risk repeating that history. So just give me the head count before you go, because if all 41 Republicans plus these few Democrats vote for the Obama and Republicans compromise, that still leaves enough Democrats to, in fact, sink the whole thing. So do you think that that is a political possibility right now, that the anger that we heard from Matt, the anger that we heard from Frank, perfectly ready to have Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Chuck Schumer and the others show up their own Democratic president by voting down his compromise in the coming days or couple of weeks? Do you think that that is politically possible?
I have not talk to folks specifically about this, but my instinct would be that is not likely to happen only because, look, you may get a handful of members who decide they're going to do this anyway. But as a political strategy, weakening your own president is a terrible idea. The weaker he is, the weaker you are as a party. So they need to find a way to embolden this president. Whether they can do that or not with this legislation is going to be important. And then they also have to find a way after this compromise to re-engage the people that we just heard on the phone to come out in 2012 and to make the case that fighting for this president and this party is still worth it.
All right. Listeners, you can keep posting your answers to the question. Should the Democrats in Congress show up their own Democratic president by voting down a compromise that he makes on extending all the Bush tax cuts for extending unemployment benefits? Go to WNYC.org or go to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. And we'll continue this conversation in a minute with liberal economists Joseph Stiglitz and Robert Kuttner. We thank ABC News political director Amy Walter. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.